Hi, and welcome to Wild Milk Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Susan.
Come hang out with us as we talk true crime, hauntings, aliens, cryptids, and everything paranormal, weird, or unexplained.
With maybe a little conspiracy thrown in, but none of that Q weird shit.
Q weird shit. First last time
you did, so I was like, oh dang, I wish we hadn't have gone in that order last time, because we're going out of chronological order, which kind of messes with my brain a little bit.
I can still go first if you want.
It's up to you. I mean, we can go backwards in time.
Let's do it.
So we're gonna be talking this week about the Zodiac Killer and about the Black Dahlia murder. And we have a reason for doing these two particular cases that we will tease a little bit later, in case you didn't see our Instagram post.
Yep.
So we'll start with Zodiac.
And I don't know much about this case, because Susan and I talked the other day, and I told her that I've never been into older true crime cases. And it kind of works out because she is into older true crime cases. So
I love older true crime cases. I think they're more fun to me because there's not... they're further removed. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't feel quite as grisly sometimes. Though the Black Dahlia is about as grisly as it gets, even though it's old.
That's what I was just going to say.
So Zodiac is one of the cases that I almost kind of feel like this case is overdone on podcasts and just in general. But on the other hand, I love it. Like, if there's a show about it or a new documentary or something comes up, I'm like 100% into it. So I don't know. I think maybe it's fascinating to me because it's kind of just taken on a whole life of its own. Which I guess happens when you have a case that's unsolved for 50 plus years.
Yeah. I think it's the same with the Black Dahlia.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get fully into this, let me just go ahead and say that I do absolutely enjoy the Zodiac movie with Robert Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, Jake Gyllenhaal. If you haven't watched it, Caroline, it's a great, it is a really enjoyable watch. this said, it was well done, it was entertaining, but it was based on the book that was written by Robert Graysmith, and there are definitely some inaccuracies, some big question marks, and I'll kind of circle back to that a little bit, but let's kind of get into this case. So the Zodiac Killer actually, and I'm going to say, only has 7 total victims. I mean, when you're talking about attacking people, that's a lot. But when you're talking about serial killers, it's not a serial killer who's remained this famous for so long. It doesn't feel like it's that many. Like, it seems like there should be more. So 5 of his victims were murders, and 2 of his victims actually survived.
Oh.
Which is really interesting. And in both cases, the survivor was part of a pair that were attacked at the same time.
Wow.
So that's kind of an unusual thing. So I'm just going to kind of run them down real quick, kind of go over the timeline, and then we'll go back and talk about a little bit more of detail about each one. So the first... confirmed Zodiac crime was December 20th, 1968. It was on Lake Herman Road, which is in, it's within the city limits of Benicia, California. Somebody's probably going to tell me I'm saying that wrong, which is right near Vallejo, which I feel like probably more people know where that is.
Yeah.
The victims are David Arthur Faraday, who was 17, and Betty Lou Jensen, who was 16.
Holy shit, so young.
And Lake Herman Road is just, or at the time, was just kind of this little two-lane road that kind of connected Vallejo to the outlying areas. So it wasn't like a huge... wasn't a busy street. It was definitely a place where kids would go to park. The second pair of victims were... Hang on, let me make sure I know who my survivors are. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first two victims were both killed. The second set of victims was Michael Majot, who was 19, and Darlene Farron, who was 22. And that was on the 4th of July in 1969 in a parking lot at Blue Rock Springs Park in Vallejo. Mm. That police arrived quick enough. Well, let me rewind. We'll come back. I'll get into the details after we go through the timeline. So the first of the Zodiac letters, which is probably why this case is so famous, is mm-hmm. that Zodiac named himself. He wrote these mysterious letters. The first of the letters arrived on August 1st, 1969. And then they were followed by two more on the 7th and the 8th. So he was like really wanting the attention.
Yeah.
Then September 27th, 1969, at Lake Berryessa, which was also a park in Napa County, the two victims were Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Ann Shepherd. He was 20, she was 22. Again, he survived and she did not.
Wow.
And in this case, they were stabbed. The previous victims were all shot. But these victims were stabbed.
Now, you're probably going to get into this, so just ignore me if you are. But okay. Did he not see the survivors? Did they not, like, see what he looked so, like?
Brian Hartnell did not ever see his face because by the time he was looking at him, Zodiac had actually put on a kind of a hood mm-hmm. that covered his face.
Okay.
Michael Majot was shot in the face and in the neck. Like he sustained some really serious injuries. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some interviews with him and it's really hard to know what he remembers and what he's created in his head. Because okay. he kind of changes like as he's talking, like even just within an interview, he goes from saying something might have been true to like just within the conversation saying, no, that for sure happened.
That's a lot of trauma to have to remember. That's a lot of trauma. Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, I don't think anybody would, don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting that he should remember it better. It's just, it's hard to know what parts of what he remembers are accurate because of the injuries and the trauma. Mm-hmm. He talks about, they asked, I saw one interview with him where they asked him how long did they wait for help? And he starts out by saying it was 9 hours and then he says 4 hours. And I don't think it was anywhere near that long. I think it was one of those things that it felt like it took a really long time.
Yeah.
Because he was very injured. He gave somewhat of a description, but he couldn't describe his face. He described him with dark curly hair and being a big guy, but he didn't really have any description of, and that he was a white male.
Yeah.
But that was the extent of the description he was able to give. He goes back and forth. He says he might have been wearing glasses. Yes, he was absolutely wearing glasses. So it's hard to know how much of it is what he truly can remember and what he's created as a memory with all of the other accounts.
Yeah.
So, okay. So Brian Hartnell survives the stabbing, but he's not able to give a description. Cecilia Shepherd actually did briefly see the man, and she was still alive when police got there. And before she was taken away, she actually was answering some questions. Mm-hmm. And she was able to give kind of a description, but when she saw him before he put the hood on, he was too far away for her to really see any really specific features. She couldn't see his eye color. She really couldn't be sure. Like, she was pretty sure. She described him as a white male, but she really couldn't give.
Well, yeah, that was dark, right?
No, that one was in the middle of the day.
Oh, shit.
They were, we'll talk more about how that attack happened, because it's kind of wild. These are all kind of wild. Mm-hmm. And then the final official victim was Paul Lee Stein, who was 29. He's a real outlier for me as far as being an official Zodiac victim, because it was not in a secluded area. It was not a couple. He was a cab driver, and he was shot in the middle of the Presidio Heights neighborhood in San Francisco on October 11th of 1969.
That sounds completely off.
It does sound completely off. Yeah, it does sound completely off.
What was their reasoning for that being so an official, like, Zodiac killing? Do you know? I mean, it's okay if you don't.
The description of the perpetrator, I believe. There were children in there who were in their own home who watched the shooting happen from their window.
Oh, shit.
And were able to give a description. Now, my question is, this is October of 1969. This has been a story in California, in this area. So my question about that is, did they describe what they saw, or did they describe the boogeyman that they had mm-hmm. been
told,
probably afraid of
mm-hmm.
to an extent, and hearing about on the news? You know,
how old were they? I mean, that's so specific. You probably don't know that, but...
I would have to look and see if I could find that. I want to think the oldest son was like 10, mm-hmm. old enough to give a decent description. And they were paying attention. I mean, it's just hard to know. And to be fair, the description of this guy in the composite sketch is like every nondescript, plain ass white dude in the late 60s. Like, there's just nothing special about him. Like, he could be like, oh, look, here's the composite. And I keep seeing things that they're like, he looks just like the composite. I'm like, you could have walked outside, thrown a rock, and like ricocheted off of three guys that look like that.
White men.
Which is white dude with basic ass features, like thick rimmed glasses. Those were the glasses. If you wore glasses, that's what you had.
Have you watched New Girl?
No.
What?
I have not. I saw, that's the one with Zooey Deschanel, right?
Yeah.
I've seen like the first couple of episodes. You need to watch
it. It's that and The Office are like my comfort shows that I always go back to. But there's a character in there and he's talking to his daughter. And she's in preschool and somebody broke in, and he's asking her who broke in, and she says, a white man, and he goes, a white man. Like, every time you say white man, that's what I'm reminded of.
She white probably man. Would have described the same guy, except maybe with a little bit different style, because not the 60s.
Probably.
But that's kind of one of the things about this case that fascinates me, because is it just one person? Or are these all different people? But because they look so plain, it's just easy to be like, okay, they all go together, especially the cab driver.
Yeah.
Because it's just so outside.
Yeah, the first two instances, not people, but like the first two couples. I mean,
all three of the first three are all super similar. The first two were in cars One was just kind of at a, the one on Lake Herman Road is just kind of like a,
lookout point. It's almost
like a turnaround.
Okay.
So it's not really, it wasn't really a parking lot. It's just kind of a place, you know, just like a wider shoulder where you could like pull in and turn around. The second one was in a parking lot in a park. And the third one was actually at a park, but not a, it wasn't a real developed area. It's kind of, it's a reservoir. So it wasn't a place that there were a lot of people at any given time.
So like I said, I don't know really anything about this case. So I'm going to have some questions that are probably really obvious, but
no.
So the two couples were at what you call a park. You said one was like a reservoir and the other one was just like a road, like a turnaround.
Well, so it makes me, the middle one was actually in the parking lot of Blue Rock Springs Park.
Yeah. So it makes me wonder if that little turnaround you're talking about was either like a little lovers, like they knew about it. They knew that was a place to go. So the killer, but that it, you know, he was like sitting there waiting possibly for, or either that, or he followed them there.
He had to follow them.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why in a little bit.
Ooh.
Or at least he had to happen upon them.
Yeah.
After the cab driver was killed, and I say the description. The other thing is, I think he took credit for the cab driver. However, okay. he claims in at least one of his letters that he has 37 victims.
The Zodiac Killer is little dick energy.
So much little dick energy. And on the one hand, well, hang on. Let's rewind. So Paul Lee Stein, the cab driver, is killed on October 11th. More letters are sent on October 14th. And then November 8th and November 9th of 1969. So let me get you into a little bit more of the details of, I think we kind of talked about the victims, but okay. So the Lake Herman Road, the reason I say that he couldn't have been waiting for them. The reason I say this is that there was actually a police officer who they have worked out that they believe there was only about a 6-minute window that this could have taken place because they were on this road and it's a 2-lane road and you can see everything.
Yeah.
They did not see anyone coming towards them. And they did mention that they take kind of a shortcut. So there was a small area that somebody could have come from that other direction and they wouldn't have seen them coming or going, but they had driven past the area where they ultimately found the car and the kids just like within half an hour of the murders. So there was nobody there at the time. And then they responded very quickly because they were already kind of right in the area. So this couple was actually, this is David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen. They were on their first date. It's just a few days before Christmas in 1968. And they were planning to go to a Christmas concert at Hogan High School, which is about 3 blocks from Jensen's home. They visited a friend, then they went to a restaurant, and then they went to go park on Lake Herman Road.
On a first date?
So, I think we automatically assume that that's like getting hot and heavy. And I think maybe that's not the case.
Probably not.
I think they were kind of just like looking for a place to just sit and talk and probably make out. I mean, yeah. This all happened late in the evening, roughly 11 o'clock at night.
Okay.
They think that the first shot was fired at the car, and that the theory is that he shot at the car in order to try to get them to get out of the car.
Oh, okay.
Like, to startle them so they would get out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Faraday was about halfway out of the car and was shot in the head and killed. And then Jensen tried to run away, and she was shot 5 times in the back as she ran. And she was found about 28 feet from the car.
That's horrible.
It is. The Blue Rock Springs murder also took place late at night. It was just before midnight on the 4th of July. Darlene Farron and Michael Mageau went out to Blue Rock Springs Park, which is in Vallejo, which is 4 miles from the Lake Herman Road murder site. A second car drove in and parked alongside them and then left. But then about 10 minutes later, another car, or maybe the same car, this is another one of the things that Michael Mageau is really iffy about.
Mm-hmm.
He also says that they had been followed that night. But that apparently was not really reported during the investigation, or it really wasn't. It wasn't something, and maybe he did say it, but they just didn't really think that they could trust that account.
Yeah.
I don't know. He was pretty severely injured and hard to know. He does report that the person approached the passenger side, which he was in the passenger side, and shined a flashlight into his face. And he rolled down the window because he thought it was a police officer.
Yeah.
And when he first was shot, he didn't realize he was shot at first. He thought that the guy had hit him.
Oh, my God.
Somehow he survived. I honestly don't even know how he survived.
It had to have, blown his face off.
And he doesn't even, he doesn't have, if you just saw him, walking down the street, you would never know.
What's his name again?
Michael Mageau. It's Mageau.
Okay.
And the really interesting thing about this attack is that the reason he survived, most likely, is that the killer called the Vallejo Police Department to report it and to claim responsibility.
Oh, wow.
At 12:40 on July 5th, so within about half an hour of the attack. At that time, the caller also took credit for the murders of Jensen and Faraday earlier in that year.
Yeah.
They were able to trace the phone. They were able to trace the call to a phone booth. But of course, no one was there by the time they got there to see where it was. So this is the first physical description we get. And he describes the attacker being late 20s to maybe early 30s, being roughly 200 pounds. He says he was stocky. He describes him as being tall, but there's also a report where he says that he was roughly 5'8". So this is another one of the really question mark, because conventional wisdom is that Zodiac is a big guy, at least 6 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
and big, mm-hmm. bulky. Some of the witnesses say easily 250 pounds, give or take, and some say more, and some put him as tall as 6'2". This says that he described him as being having short, light brown curly hair, but the interview that I have watched with him, he describes it as being dark, almost black curly hair. So again, who knows?
And I mean, God, this was late 60s. This guy. Yeah, this
is 50 years ago.
Yeah, so.
So
and that's a long time to sit there and think about this.
Absolutely. And you know he thinks about it every day.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, I don't know how you couldn't. So the first letters, he actually, so Zodiac, in air quotes, the first letter is actually three letters that were sent to three different newspapers on August 1st. Mm-hmm. Vallejo Times Herald, San Francisco Chronicle, and San Francisco Examiner. They weren't exactly identical, but they were basically identical. In the letters, he took credit for both of the shootings, and this is the first time that he included a cipher or a cryptogram.
Okay.
He demands that the papers print his cipher on the front page, or he would, quote, cruise around all weekend killing lone people in the night and then move on to kill again until I end up with a dozen people over the weekend.
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, just desperate for attention.
Yeah.
So the Chronicle, I'm sorry, I left out a detail. They each got a cryptogram, but it was 1/3 of the total message. So it was like pieces of a puzzle.
This guy has too much fucking time on his hands.
Yeah, no shit, right? So the Chronicle published its third, but they didn't put it on the front page. They put it on page 4. And they printed it alongside a quote from the Vallejo police chief saying that he wasn't completely convinced that it was actually written by the murderer. And he requested that the writer send a second letter with more facts to prove his identity. He didn't spend all weekend killing people until he got to a dozen. And eventually, all three parts of the cipher were printed.
Mm-hmm.
The Examiner got another letter on the 7th of August. And this is the first time that he names himself Zodiac. And it's basically in response to the chief, the police chief requesting more information. He included details about the murders that hadn't been released to the public. And he said that if they could crack the code, they would have him. I take it back. I said there was a letter on August 8th. I'm sorry. That's not right. On August 8th, a couple who did basically who liked puzzles and like to solve codes just for fun, mm-hmm. cracked the cryptogram. And it contained a misspelled message that seemed to be referencing the novel, The Most Dangerous Game, and that the killer was collecting slaves for the afterlife. No names appeared. And the killer said he couldn't give away his identity yet because it would slow down or stop his slave collection. Yeah.
A lot.
It's an extra special one. So the third murder is the Lake Berryessa, which was September 27th of 1969. This was the one that was in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
They are basically just hanging out by the reservoir. And Brian Hartnell is laying on his back, kind of facing the water. There's kind of an incline that goes down towards the reservoir. So he was kind of, they're kind of on this incline and he's lying so that he can see out across the water. And Cecilia is lying kind of diagonally across on her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So they can see each other and they're talking. She sees him and is kind of alarmed.
Yeah.
And Brian doesn't immediately understand why she's so concerned. Because when she says, I see someone, he's thinking the way this reservoir kind of has these little, almost like little inlets.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's little sections of land that jut out further into the water. So he thinks based on the way she's facing that she's looking at an area that's across another little bit of water, but she's not, she's just looking like up the hill. So she tells him there's a man there and he's like, okay. But her spidey senses were tingling because she was watching him, and he basically like ducks behind a tree, mm-hmm. and that catches her attention, and she says he went behind a tree. And again, Brian's thinking he's across the water, and he's like, okay, the dude went behind a tree to pee, big deal, like, why are you being weird? As he comes out from behind the tree, she says, oh my god, he has a gun. And he gets about halfway between them and the tree, which is kind of, I would say, I've actually seen a video where they went back to the same area so that he could like point out exactly where they were. I would say like 50 feet between them and the tree. So okay. He got about 25 feet towards them before they kind of stand up. And he initially tells them that he wants money. This is the first time that he's wearing the Zodiac symbol, which is basically like a plus sign with a circle around it.
He needed a name tag.
He needed a superhero costume, but like a supervillain costume. Interestingly, there is a movie that has a killer in it who is called Zodiac. And there's also some tie-ins to some old detective comics. Like, basically nothing Zodiac did was unique. It all was pulled from somewhere. He threatens them with a gun, tells them he wants money, but they don't have any. He had, like, 75 cents in his pocket. He's like, you can have it. He gives them... So he tells them he wants the keys to the car, and they give him the keys. They basically just totally cooperate with him. Mm-hmm. They're going by the, you know, just cooperate. Brian was a psychology student. So he's trying to like psychology the guy the whole time.
Yeah.
This does not work. He ends up tying them up. Actually, he has Cecilia tie Brian up, and then he ties Cecilia up. And they can't, at this point, they can't really see him anymore. And then all of a sudden he like comes at, he doesn't shoot either one of them. He never fires the gun. In fact, Brian asks him as he's being tied up, he says, hey, just for my own peace of mind, and somebody's going to ask, is the gun even loaded? And he pops the clip out and shows him that, yeah, it's loaded. But he doesn't shoot them. He stabs them. Pretty fucking brutally. And this is the scene in the movie that is like, it's a little rough to watch, which is very interesting because I watched an interview with Brian today, and he said that the scene in the movie is as close. He said he wasn't involved, but he said the way that that happens in the movie is so close to his memory that it was just uncanny to watch.
God, I can't believe he would even watch that movie.
I kind of can't either. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things that's like such a defining part of your mm-hmm. life. I don't know how you could. I don't know. I feel like I would be very torn.
Yeah. Well, we've never been in that situation, so we don't know. But, ugh.
So, again, the killer calls Napa County Sheriff's Office from a payphone to report the crime. And he says, I want to report a murder. And then he says, no, a double murder. So he's pretty confident he's killed them both. Mm-hmm. So basically, they're trying to find out the police officer who took the call. Napa County was a small sheriff's department. So when dispatch went to lunch, took a break, whatever, whoever the lowest ranking cop was had to sit on dispatch. So it was actually a police officer who answered the call, and he called officers out. And when he first took the call, he thought, before Zodiac took credit for it, he was thinking that there had already been an officer there mm-hmm. and they were dealing with the scene and had asked somebody to call it in because they weren't able to go call it in. And then he took credit for it. So he's calling out people to go to the scene, but he leaves the line open. And the way they actually found the phone is that Zodiac just dropped the receiver and left it hanging. And I guess it's this radio reporter, Pat Stanley. I'm not 100%. That's who this says found the receiver, but he actually, like, is yelling, "Can you hear me?" And the dispatch officer is like, "Yeah, that's the phone." So when they found the payphone, there was still a wet palm print on the phone. That's how close.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he probably was able to get away because of the white man being able to blend in.
Probably.
Like,
well, and no, I mean, you know, I don't know. It's so close.
Yeah.
The next murder is the Presidio Heights murder, which is the cab driver. And like I said, this is in the middle of town. He had a white male passenger. Again, nondescript white guy. Asking, he picked up the passenger. You know what? I'm not going to say where it is. We don't know where the hell things are in San Francisco.
Yeah, no.
Basically, he was in the cab and drove one block past where he had asked to be dropped off. And the passenger shot him in the head with a 9mm. All of his victims were shot with nine millimeter.
Yeah.
He took the wallet and the car keys. Oh, this is where he's the Zodiac's victim. I forgot about the shirt tail. He tore a part of the victim's shirt. And this is about 10 o'clock at night. And this says they were teenage. The kids were all teenagers. So I guess maybe 10 was younger. I'm not sure. My memory is they were young.
Yeah.
But maybe they were like young teenagers. So they call the police while the crime is still in progress. They see that he wipes down the cab and then walks away. Two blocks away from the crime scene, two patrol officers see a white man. This is where the white man just blends in. They see a white man walking down the sidewalk. But at this point, it was initially reported as a black male.
Of course it was.
Probably because it was dark, but maybe also because racism. I don't know.
In 1969, yeah.
Yeah. however, the kids, when the detectives get on the scene, they immediately talk to the kids. And the kids say he was white. So I'm not sure why it was first called out to look for a black suspect. But they corrected almost immediately. And only after the fact do the two officers realize that could have been the person they were looking for. But at the time, he was just a guy walking down the street. He didn't fit any description of anyone they were looking for. They didn't stop him. They did, I think, maybe just either from the car or maybe they were on foot. I think they asked him if he'd seen anyone and he said no. And everybody just kind of continued on their way. Interestingly, the detective, Dave Toski, who kind of became the Zodiac detective, partially because he started connecting all of these things that they were connected because the Zodiac was communicating, but the different jurisdictions really weren't working together.
Yeah.
So he kind of started working with some of the other departments. He says he does not believe that they saw the killer. He says he thinks it was just a random person and it was a fluke.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. He doesn't really say why he thinks that, but he says that he doesn't think that that's who they saw. Toski and his partner picked this up just because they happened to be on shift that night.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the 13th of October, the San Francisco Chronicle received a letter from the Zodiac that claimed credit for the killing and contained a torn section of Stein's bloody shirt.
I was wondering if you were going to tie that back in.
Yes.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that part. I have been completely immersed in Zodiac for like 3 days.
No, you tied it back in. Now we know.
So Zodiac keeps sending letters. He sends multiple ciphers, different cryptograms. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
He's kind of exhausting, frankly. At one point, the same letter that contained the piece of the cab driver's shirt, made a threat saying that he was going to kill school children on a bus. And the quote was, "I'll just shoot out the front tire and then pick off the little kitties as they come bouncing out." Mm. Buses, school buses in this area were literally escorted by police cars for I don't even know how long.
Yeah.
Because they had no way of knowing whether that was a real threat or not a real threat. He also, on October 20th, someone claiming to be the Zodiac called the Oakland Police Department and demanded that one of two prominent lawyers, either F. Lee Bailey or Melvin Belli, appear on AM San Francisco, which was a really popular talk show on a San Francisco TV station, so that he could call in and talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Bailey wasn't available, but Melvin Belli did appear. And someone did call in and claim to be the Zodiac and spoke to Melvin Belli. He asked him if he could call in by something other than Zodiac. And the caller says to call him Sam, which is really interesting because of the son of Sam.
Yeah. And how big he was.
He basically tells Melvin Belli that he wants to talk to him because he wants to avoid the gas chamber. Because at this point, California still had a death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So Melvin Belli actually agrees to meet him outside a shop, just kind of in an agreed location, but nobody ever showed up. A lot of the dispatch people who had spoken to Zodiac when he actually claimed responsibility for the killings say that they do not think that it was the same person. They say the voice doesn't sound the same. The cadence doesn't sound the same. Like they both felt like they would absolutely recognize the voice again. And they don't think that it was the same person.
Well, that's that weird thing where people confess to murders for no fucking reason. Like, the Black Dahlia had hundreds of them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He actually ends up on the 1-year anniversary of the murder of David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen, Zodiac mailed a letter directly to Melvin Belli that included another swatch of Paul Stein's shirt, I guess to prove that it is who he is, and said that he wanted Belli to help him. So...
And they for sure know it was his shirt? Like, they tested it?
I believe so. I believe they were able to confirm that it was, in fact, his shirt.
Maybe he was just changing his voice. That's why it's unsolved.
Mm-hmm. So there are some other cases that are potentially connected to Zodiac, but they can't be confirmed. But some of them start, like, the first one was 1963, and there's some real very close similarities. It was a teenage couple on a beach. They were shot, they were tied up, they were shot with a 22. So definitely similar, but he never specifically claimed credit for it. No one claiming to be Zodiac ever specifically claimed credit for any of these.
Did they think that he was a local?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so. There are a couple of people who have ties to all of the places involved. Like, the number of suspects is wild, too. So there was that couple in 1963. Sherry Jo Bates was stabbed to death on October 30th in 1966 at Riverside City College. Her connection to Zodiac didn't show up until far later when Paul Avery, who was a reporter at the Chronicle, who, as much as Dave Toski became the Zodiac detective, Paul Avery became the guy that wrote about Zodiac. He got a tip about the similarities between those, between her murder and the other Zodiac killings and some of the circumstances.
Yeah.
There's a disappearance in 1970 in Nevada. So we're still all kind of in the same area. It was actually right near Lake Tahoe.
But a disappearance seems odd given the fact that he would kill, or what he thought he was doing, killing them, and then so immediately
he sent a postcard that seemed to possibly reference her.
Okay.
But not specifically. So
yeah.
She's a giant question mark because no, I mean, she's never been found. So
it's so wild. That's so wild.
And then the last one was an abduction in March of 1970. Actually, Donna Lass, the disappearance, and that I had this out of order. The Lake Tahoe disappearance would have been the last one because that was September of 1970. Mm-hmm. Kathleen Johns claims that she was abducted. She and her infant daughter were abducted and held basically in a vehicle for about an hour and a half in the Modesto area. She's driving and somebody starts flashing their lights and honking at her. And the man tells her that he saw her rear wheel wobbling and he'll tighten it up for her. She says, oh, okay, thank you. Because it was the 70s, early 70s. And I guess you just let people do things. I would be like, please get away from me.
Same.
But he wasn't actually tightening anything. He actually loosened all of the lug nuts. So when she pulled back onto the road, her wheel came off almost immediately. So then he pulls up again and, you know, offers to drive her to a service station. And there's some question that maybe he didn't see that she had a baby in the car.
Yeah.
And that's why he didn't kill her. But he did threaten to kill them. So, well, at least she says that he threatened to kill them. She actually saw a composite sketch that the teenagers had provided for Paul Stein's killer. After she, as she's reporting this abduction, she sees the composite sketch and points it out and says that was the man. So again, is that because he just looks like every other white dude, or
like she looks like every other bitch?
Like, I'm just not sure. Let's talk about suspects a little bit. Arthur Lee Allen was one of the main suspects. And he is, this is why I say that the Zodiac movie and Robert Graysmith's book are historically inaccurate, because that's who he very much keys in on and basically says, this is who I think the Zodiac is. Arthur Lee Allen always vehemently denied being the Zodiac. He was a convicted child molester. He happened to wear a Zodiac brand watch, which I don't really think is that close of a tie. Yeah. But he was, he's kind of an oddball, and he was close enough to all of the areas where people were murdered and didn't have alibis, which pretty much is the reason they thought it was him. There's more to it, but the movie and Robert Graysmith's book really, like, really focus in on, like, this is the guy. But in 2002, they were able to exclude his DNA from any of the DNA samples that they had from the case. So almost certainly he was not the guy.
And has anyone put this DNA in that system?
I feel for sure that they have.
God, there's got to be some kind of relative out there. I'm looking at that.
I don't know. I haven't read anything about them using that database, and maybe they just don't have enough. Maybe there's not enough of a sample.
That's possible, and is so long ago.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they didn't have, when this was happening, they just didn't have the DNA technology.
Mm-mm. No, no way.
They have tested more and more DNA and try, and there's a series that the History Channel did about Zodiac, which is really interesting. I haven't watched all of it, but they go down a ton of rabbit holes.
Yeah.
And it is very, very interesting. And they, one of the things that they're doing is trying to connect the DNA that they have with it that's already attached to the Zodiac case to the Sherry Jo Bates murder that was 1963.
Mm-hmm.
To see if they can at least connect those and then say, okay, maybe this is the, you know, it appears that this at least could be the same person, and then try to kind of reverse engineer from there. So they, in that show and the, you know, lots of other places, there are two other suspects, Ross Sullivan and Lawrence K, who was actually Lawrence Kane.
Mm-hmm.
He was initially the first person to mention him, didn't have his name correct. And they both look like they could be the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, the crazy thing is that they both have ties to so many of the same places. Ross Sullivan actually has ties to Sherry Jo Bates, who was killed in Riverside. He was a library assistant at Riverside City College. And that's where she was last seen before she disappeared and then was later was found. I don't know if it was just the same night or...
Could that just be a huge coincidence, though?
It could be a huge coincidence. He also had some ties to a similar style. He wore military boots that had a similar... That had the same kind of footprint as they found at Lake Berryessa. But, like, mm-hmm. how many other people had those boots?
Yeah.
He also had some other ties to code breaking and code writing, as well as there's a later letter that mentions it's kind of a last ditch effort to get some attention.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2 or 3 years after the last communication, this letter shows up claiming to be from Zodiac, and he's claiming that he's going to kill somebody in Albany, New York. Well, Ross Sullivan has some ties to Albany, New York.
Okay.
But so does Lawrence Kane. And he had ties to working with codes. So, Ross Sullivan had also been hospitalized multiple times for schizophrenia and bipolar disorder.
Okay.
Lawrence Kane was diagnosed with impulse control disorder after a brain injury he suffered in a 1962 accident.
Oh, that could be true. That, yeah.
Uh-huh. He worked at the same Nevada hotel as the Lake Tahoe woman who disappeared.
Mm.
So, and also, even though Kathleen Johns initially pointed out the composite sketch from Paul Stein's murder, later she picked out Lawrence Kane in a photo lineup. I really feel like all of these things support my all white men lookalike theory.
Really, you're just proving your point, really.
I know. Particularly in the 60s, when I feel like they were all clean shaven and they all had the same haircut and they all wore the same glasses.
Yeah.
Like, they 100%. Genuinely, when, if you look up a picture of Ross Sullivan and a picture of Lawrence Kane, like they don't exactly look like each other, but yet they both look like a somewhat generic white guy wearing glasses.
I'm doing
They're
it
both
right
kind
now.
Of big guys. There are some other wild connections. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was investigated for connections to the Zodiac Killer because he worked in Northern California at the time. And he had an interest in cryptography. And he also threatened the press into publishing his writing. But he was ruled out based on fingerprint and handwriting comparisons.
Ross Sullivan looks a lot like the composite sketch.
He does. But now look at Lawrence Kane.
Okay, hold on.
Ross Sullivan, I think, looks the most like the composite sketch, which, by the way, the composite sketch is so generic, I think.
Yeah, actually, my phone just died. I don't think Lawrence Kane looks that much like it because he's got
He doesn't look as much like the sketch, but he looks more like the descriptions of somebody who is much bigger.
Yeah.
The sketch, like, the face is really slim.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's always described as being a bigger guy.
Yeah.
So there was also a member of the Manson family named Bruce Davis who was investigated. But they, in fact, in the California Bureau of let me take a nice deep breath before I even do this. The California Bureau of Criminal Identification and Investigation.
Oh my goodness.
The CBCII.
That is a mouthful in itself.
It is. In 1970, they released a report that said that all male members of the Manson family had been investigated and eliminated.
Okay.
There have been multiple people investigated for this. And basically, bottom line, nobody knows. So now's a good time to tease the fact that we have another potential Zodiac suspect that we're going to talk about with our friend Jack. Mm-hmm. And he's going to tie these two cases together for us.
Exciting.
I know. I'm so excited about that. I want to follow up, though. I have questions. I have like elementary school style post-reading questions.
Let's do it.
Do we think that these are all, even the letters, do we think they're all the same person?
No. My immediate answer is no. Because
the handwriting, they have done some matches on handwriting. There are some indications that it was written by the same person, mm-hmm. but because they printed some of that handwriting, I think it's really difficult to say for sure that nobody could have copied it.
Yeah. And the phone calls, especially the phone call to the morning show, and the two different descriptions, it just doesn't add up completely for me. But that's not to say that they...
But it's interesting that even though everybody said that they didn't think it was the same person that they had talked to on the phone, mm-hmm. when he called the morning show, but then somebody who had a piece of that bloody shirt mailed it to the lawyer that was on the morning show. But that's not to say that the real killer wasn't listening to somebody impersonate him.
What if, just throwing like a wrench in this, it was people working together, like two men working together.
So now we're delving into the sons of Sam.
Okay.
I mean, not really, but there's that semi-new documentary on Netflix called Sons, plural, of Sam.
I haven't seen that.
It's really good. I know a lot of people really hated it, and there was a lot, there were some things in it that I was like, that's not accurate. And there was some stuff that was left out. But they make some real interesting points about Son of Sam not being just one person.
Yeah.
And I think that Zodiac could also be not just one person.
Maybe one day we'll find out.
So, there is one thing that we should definitely, I should have done this before I got to my reader questions. Last year, the cipher was solved.
Like, legit?
Legitimately, it was solved.
I can't believe you waited till the end to say this.
You gotta bury the lead sometime.
Yeah.
So, a code-breaking team that included people from U.S., Australia, and Belgium cracked what had been called the 340 cipher. Don't ask me why they called it that, but that was one of the ones that they had not been able to crack. Oh, never mind. Do ask me. The name of the cipher refers to the number of characters in the puzzle.
Okay.
Long story short, it didn't have the Zodiac's name in it.
Okay, long story short, what did it say?
So it said, I don't know if this has all, like, every single bit of it. I don't know if they're holding part of it back.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll just go with what they say they have. He says, I hope you're having lots of fun trying to catch me. Sir, yes, for decades now.
But I don't want to give him credit for that with his little dick energy.
I mean, I think he's dead.
I mean, he's for sure dead, but still, in the afterlife.
True. It mentions a TV show, but it's not clear in the cipher which show he's referring to. But the Chronicle reported that the cipher was sent to the newspaper on November 8th, which was a few weeks after Zodiac called in and talked to Melvin Belli on the air.
Okay.
So it also said, this cipher confirms law enforcement officials' suspicions that the caller to the talk show was a fraud.
Okay.
Which again, like, who knows? Like, was it really a fraud, or is it him saying that wasn't me? I mean, who the hell knows? He says, I'm not afraid of the gas chamber because it will send me to paradise all the sooner because now I have enough slaves to work for me. Where everyone else has nothing when they reach paradise, so they are afraid of death.
With how crazy that sounds, it kind of makes me go back to the guy that was diagnosed with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
I mean, seems like somebody who was diagnosed with that would think they were slaves.
That definitely...
That's stretching it, that but...
I don't know. One of the things that happens, at least somewhat frequently with people who have schizophrenia is delusions of grandeur.
Yeah.
And this kind of like, now I'm going to, you know, paradise, when I die, I'm going to paradise and it's going to be so great because I'll have all these slaves.
Yeah.
It's kind of the kind of thing that same concept, yeah. Better than everybody else kind of thing. So they do think that the cipher was legitimate because the word paradise was misspelled, which they think is purposeful because it was misspelled the same way in more than one of Zodiac's letters. Mm-hmm. And they think it was on purpose. I don't know why they think it was on purpose. Maybe he just can't spell.
Yeah.
So the FBI released a statement. They confirmed that the cipher was broken. Their statement said, the FBI is aware that a cipher attributed to the Zodiac Killer was recently solved by private citizens. The Zodiac Killer case remains an ongoing investigation for the FBI San Francisco Division and our local law enforcement partners. They're certainly not giving anything away, so I don't know how much of it they released.
Gosh, and I feel like at this point, it's like, just tell the people what they want to know because the guy's probably dead. Definitely dead. But I'm not a cop. I don't understand how and why they would have to keep things secret like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I know that to an extent, having information that everybody else doesn't have is sometimes the thing that allows them to solve these things because they know things, you know, they're able to know information that then they can use to figure out who else knows it.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
So my second question is, do we think that if these crimes happened in 2021, they would be solved?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One, surveillance everywhere. People have phones. People have, what the fuck am I trying to think?
GPS.
Thank you. GPS. There's surveillance DNA. Cameras at fucking parks everywhere.
True.
So, and I mean, it'd be grainy, but we'd have more of a lead than we did with this one.
True.
But there are plenty of crimes that happen nowadays that are not solved even with all that question. Shit.
If this happened in 2021, would we even consider 5 murder victims to be that big of a deal?
No.
See, well, I think not either.
Hold on. I think I would have to take into consideration how big the town was, because 5 murder victims in a small town within 2...
If it was just a tiny town, and I don't really know. I don't know enough about California. I mean, I know that none of these places were like huge metropolitan, but I mean, San Francisco was.
But this was in a 2-year span. And to me, and I think five, that we...
5 murder victims and 2 survivors over a span of 2 years. Give
but
or
with
take.
With how similar they were, you know, I think that we would... I forgot what the original fucking question.
Would we even feel like that 5 victims was like enough to even pay that much attention to?
Maybe not at first as they were rolling in, but I think if you saw the bigger picture after all of it happened, you'd be like,
I think if you just literally took the exact same events,
yeah,
I think it would still be the letters.
Yeah.
And the mystique and the code and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
My last question is, do we think that this has morphed into an urban legend? Like, obviously the murders happened.
Yeah.
But.
Or do you think it's been sensationalized so much that it's like
just become so much. Like, are we drawing more things in and trying to. I think what I'm asking is, because we're so fascinated mostly with the letters, yeah, are we trying to make him into a bigger monster in order to support that fascination?
Yeah, I think so.
I kind of think so too.
Yeah.
Because I just feel, it just seems to me like this is kind of, and if you watch any of the, and I know somebody's going to be like, the History Channel's dumb. Yeah, sometimes the History Channel can get real dumb. They're just desperate for things to talk about. I mean, for years, it was all Nazis all the time. And then they had to come up with new programming. But the show that they did on this was really interesting. But there are parts of it that I'm just like, I feel like we're just reaching to try to make this bigger in order to make the fact that it's still unsolved make more sense.
I completely agree with that. I think it's the same thing a little bit with the Black Dahlia case. Definitely. I mean,
it was just, I don't mean to say it was just one girl, but like, yeah, people are murdered all the time.
Right. And, you know, I was thinking about that when I was reading about the case, because it really, I mean, yeah, it was really fucking gruesome. And yes, it was.
And her body was dumped in a public place, which is.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was the sensation in that one, is that it was gross, like truly gruesome.
Yeah,
and kind of put out there.
A lot of the sensation around that was, it was this single young woman with a reckless background,
mm-hmm,
and people grasped onto that. And we'll definitely talk more about this next week. But I think that's why it was sensationalized so much, because it was just this.
And I kind of feel the same way about that. Like, you know, there's all these attempts to make it into this bigger conspiracy with more attached to it. And it's like, is it really, or was she just murdered?
Also, have you thought about maybe these cases are so much bigger than cases nowadays? Because millennial women were not... around to talk
to solve crime
endlessly about true crime. So these cases
and solve crime via podcast.
Yeah, these cases seem so much bigger because they weren't like just talked about. I mean, I don't know. That's just
yeah. And I mean, you know, we kind of talked about how like spiritualism and ghost hunting and all of that has kind of been popular and then fallen out of favor and then become popular again. Mm-hmm. I feel like true crime is kind of the same way. And I think in this, well, in the late 60s, the Manson murders, the Son of Sam, Zodiac.
Yeah.
That's when the term serial killer was first actually even used.
Oh yeah.
So I think there was definitely a fascination about those stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were others. Temper was kind of around the same time, right?
I don't know.
I'm gonna have to look real quick. I feel like he was late 60s. And Rodney Alcala, who died last week.
Oh, another podcast tagged us in that. And I posted
Oh,
it.
I think I saw that.
Yeah.
He was a little bit earlier. Well, no, he was between 64 and 73. So that was also in California. Also, California was having a really rough time in the 60s.
Yeah, they really were.
They were struggling.
All the serial killers in the 60s said, you know what? Let's go to California. Let's fuck
it's
some shit
so
up.
It's so true. And it's all, like, so many of them are Contra Costa County. Like, I cannot name a single county that I can think of in any state outside of Texas except Contra Costa County, California, because all of the murderers go there.
That's really weird.
It is really weird. By the same token, though, I mean, California's always had a high population density, so the more people you have in the same place, the more likely they are to start killing each other.
True.
Because humans are the worst animals.
We are the worst.
Humans are the worst animals and kids are the weirdest pets.
I saw in this child-free group that I'm in where someone basically said kids are glorified. Sorry, my voice is cracking. Kids are glorified sex trophies. Like, I did sex right. Here's my kid.
I mean, I guess if that's your goal, like,
yeah,
like it's a really good way to be like, look,
that's a really expensive trophy.
It's so expensive. It's like you win and then you just keep paying for that trophy for the rest of your life.
You win, but did you really win?
You won.
Thank you so much for the continued support. Please find and follow us at Wild and Woke Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Same thing on Facebook. If you're looking for bonus content, early episode releases, free merch, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/wildandwokepodcast. If you have any weird, creepy, or I can't believe this happened to me moments, please reach out because we want to share them. Our email is wildandwokepodcast@gmail.com.
And remember, all stories start somewhere. Be wild, stay woke, and question everything. Thank you.